Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition and episode of Quest Youth Radio, Quest Community Vibrations, live on Blog Talk Radio. Yes, and after, you know, a few shows, you kind of get comfortable with what you're doing. This evening, we have our co-host and student host, Walter, as usual, Pierce, and that's not his middle name. He'll be joining us momentarily. But for the meanwhile and in between time, let me start our show by giving an introduction of what to expect for tonight. A cornucopia of physics dictates that where there are vibrations, there must be a medium. And all vibrations possess a wave nature. In our community, our art is in fact and in spirit the medium through which our waves travel. Where there is no medium, there are no vibrations. And without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Mr. Walter Pierce. Walter, are you there?
Yes. Good evening, everybody. Good evening.
Walter, you're right on time, man. I did the introduction of a Quest moment, and tell the audience, what are you going to deliver for tonight?
Well, for tonight, I have a short biography on the life of the one and only James Baldwin, and if you want to read the intro, that's fine.
Oh, okay, that sounds good to me. Well, first of all, I'd like to say to the audience, thank you again for tuning in. And I'd also like to say that he falls under our segment of diamonds. You see, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply and you are bound to find yourself. You see, diamonds provides an historical message that interprets what happened and suggests what can happen by providing an historical analysis. Only by recognizing yesterday's mistakes can we make corrections today and build a better tomorrow for all our nights to come. Because no one knows the past better than those who have walked in it and bear its burden. Walter.
Yes, and started off, a writer and playwright, James Baldwin was born on August 2nd, 1924, in Harlem, New York. One of the 20th century's greatest writers, Baldwin broke new literary ground with the exploration of racial and social issues in his many works. He was especially known for his essays on the Black experience in America. Baldwin was born to a young single mother, Emma Jones, at Harlem Hospital. She reportedly never told him the name of his biological father. Jones married a Baptist minister named David Baldwin when James was about 3 years old. After graduating from high school in 1942, he had to put his plans for college on hold to help support his family, which included 7 young children. He took whatever work he could find, including laying railroad tracks for the U.S. Army in New Jersey. During this time, Baldwin frequently encountered discrimination, being turned away from restaurants, bars, and other establishments because he was an African American. After being fired from the New Jersey job, Baldwin sought other work and struggled to make ends meet. On July 29, 1943, Baldwin lost his father and gained his 8th sibling the same day. He soon moved to Greenwich Village, a New York City neighborhood popular with artists and writers, devoting himself to writing a novel Baldwin took odd jobs to support himself. He befriended the writer Richard Wright, and through Wright, he was able to land a fellowship in 1945 to cover his expenses. Baldwin started getting essays and short stories published in such national places as The Nation and The Partisan Review and Commentary. In 1963, there was a noted change in Baldwin's work with The Fire Next Time. This collection of essays was meant to educate white men on what it means to be black. It also offered white readers a view of themselves throughout the eyes of the African-American community. In the work, Baldwin offered a brutally realistic picture of race relations, but he remained hopeful about possible improvements. He says, "If we do not falter in our duty now, we may be able to end the racial nightmare." His words struck a chord with the American people, and The Fire Next Time sold more than a million copies. By the early 1970s, Baldwin seemed to despair over the racial situation. He had witnessed so much violence in his previous decade, especially with the assassination of Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King Jr., caused by racial hatred. The disillusion became apparent in his work, which employed a more strident tone than in earlier works. Many critics point to No Name in the Street, a 1972 collection of essays, as the beginning of the change in Baldwin's work. He also worked on a screenplay around this time, trying to adopt the autobiography of Malcolm X by Alex Haley for the big screen. Baldwin died on December 1st, 1987, at his home in St. Paul de Vence, France. He, never wanting to or a leader, Baldwin saw his personal mission as bearing witness to the truth. He accomplished this mission through his extensive, rapturous literacy legacy. Thank you.
Sound like you hung up the phone there. I'm only joking. As you go through the information and you talk about James Baldwin, you being the student host, and I know you're in the capacity of learning, what did you learn from this information about James Baldwin?
Well, I learned like how he was able. The most thing stuck out was because I see a lot of clips of James Baldwin actually online, and he gives like a lot of different perspectives and just words that you don't see from a lot of leaders back then. You know, he has a different perspective. He didn't really want to be like the face or the forefront of the movement. I believe James Baldwin was one of the people who was actually a part of the movement to help send Africans back to their homeland in Africa. He was a part of that, and that was one of his views that he believed that would help the black race, you know, people who actually want to go back to their homeland and engage with people that look just like them and that treat them the same. You know, that was one of his views that was different from a lot of leaders.
Okay. Have you ever had the opportunity to actually hear him speak on video, online, or television in any form or fashion?
Yeah, I've seen a couple clips of different talks he had with like people and news reporters.
What did you think when you heard him speak?
You know, he's because you know he's kind of like, how should I explain? He's more like, in my opinion, his personality is like laid back. You know, he was a heavy smoker. You always see him in most of the interviews. He'll light up. He'll smoke a lot, and he'll just get to his point. He wouldn't be so long-winded. He'll just say what he believes, and he just wasn't scared of what anybody thought of his opinions.
Okay. All right. Now, let's do something interesting, something unrehearsed. I'm going to make a statement that James Baldwin made, and I want you to interpret it as best you can. Are you ready?
All right, let's get it.
All right. First one. Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. Interpretation, Walter.
Yes, I heard of that. I mean, it's true because in some way, you know, when you're faced with a problem, you might not be able to solve every problem, but at least make an attempt, or what I think about it, when he says the last part of it, you know, but no problems can be fixed unless it's faced. That's true. You have to don't think, like, for example, let me give you an example and make it clear. I guess racism. You know, that's a problem that we could, it's not, I don't think forever is going to be like, just forever exempt, you know, it's still going to be people out there who have racist views, but to at least help the problem or to fix it, you have to face it. You can't just leave it alone or it's just going to be the same. If you try to at least make an attempt and do the best you could to fix it, there's a high possibility of a change happening.
Very good. I like that. I would have used the term racism as an example myself because that was exactly what I was thinking. Okay, we're going to try another one. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go for it. It is certain, in any case, that ignorance, aligned with power, is the most ferocious enemy justice can have. Let me say it again.
Oh, yeah.
It is certain. Oh, you got it?
No, say it again.
I'll say it again. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It is certain, in any case, that ignorance aligned with power is the most furious enemy justice can have.
It couldn't be better said. That's honestly the truth. It's the truth. Everybody shouldn't be able to know that. If you have somebody, like, for example, our president or somebody, a lot of white rich people who just believe in only themselves and the wealthy, the 1%, that's what crumbles the country and that's what messes everything up because, let me think about it, because they're the 1%. They're the one funding, doing a lot of the funding, making, influencing a lot of the political leaders. They're the ones that are being listened to the most because they have the highest power and they have the most wealth. And you have somebody with ignorance with that amount of wealth, you can't really change that. That's how a lot of problems occur, and that's how our world is right now. That's how our country, I should say, is right now. That's exactly how our country is, full with a lot of wealthy people, full of ignorance, who just want to keep it the same, who only think about themselves and the 1%.
Okay. I'm going to give you an easier one, all right? And, okay, let me just give it to you. I love America more than any other country in this world. And exactly for this reason, I insist on the right to criticize her in perpetuity. I love America more than any other country in the world, and exactly for this reason, I insist on the right to criticize her in perpetuity.
criticize. Okay, what I think he's saying there, I don't know if I'm 100%, but what I think he's saying is because he likes how he's able to speak his mind, I guess, on the country, because America, you know, so-called land of the free, but in this part, you have freedom of speech. In a lot of other countries, you can't just freely speak on anything. But in this country, like, you can, I guess. You know, you could speak your mind on what you think about things and just speak out on it, I guess. What's he trying to say? You have, I believe, you're just able to voice your opinion more.
Okay. All right. This is going to be the last one, Walter. Okay. All children right. have never been very good at listening to their elders, but they have never failed to imitate them.
Okay. Okay. Listen. All right. So, you know, yeah, that's true. Kids, even I'm guilty of it. You know, we might not always listen to what older people or the elders say, but I guess the more they keep saying it, the more we realize, like, we don't really realize how we're actually following what they do because they constantly say it so much. And, you know, it just, once you get older, once that kid gets older and he just starts naturally doing it, you're like, oh, how did I know this? Oh, I guess an elder. I'm imitating them because they taught me this. They led me to this path so many times, even though I've barely listened. And, you know, when I get older and I realize I have to do these things to improve and to move on, it just shocks you, I guess.
Yeah, well, you'll find many of an adult who hopefully can admit that at some point as they get older and they have their own children, Walter, they actually say, I can't believe I'm turning into my parents.
Yeah.
You know, and it's true. But in a lot of cases, most people, in particular children, you know, young people, you know, you can tell them one thing, but they definitely going to do what they see.
Uh-huh.
They see the elder in their household do. They're going to do the same thing in a lot of instances, right?
Right.
Now, one of the things that yeah, we have plenty of time. Do you have anything else on chat?
Oh, I guess this was I like this show. I like how you throw in those little challenges for me and those challenges to different interpreting different things. I think we should continue with that. You know, we can add a couple more. If we have a couple more people on the line, you know, we could try it out with them. But, yeah, I like this today.
Oh, okay. You want another one?
We'll save it for Friday. We'll save it for Friday.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that. Are you available this Saturday?
Saturday. Okay. Saturday is actually better. Yeah.
Yeah, we go back to our regular programming on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. And while this sounds like a personal conversation, this is intended for you out there, the audience. So that'll be 10 o'clock on Saturday. Is that right, Walter?
Yeah, 10 o'clock on Saturday. Make sure you tune in.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, so one of the things that I also wanted you to do was Langston Hughes, right? And, you know, for whatever reason, I guess you decided that you're just going to do one of these guys and not both of them, right? But one of the things that I find of particular interest to myself about James Baldwin and Langston Hughes is the fact that they were able to look at the landscape and the environment for the time period in which they lived, and they were able to express and write about it using literature. And they became some of they are two of the most prolific writers of their time. And Langston Hughes was one of the literary artists that I was introduced to in elementary school when I was I almost wanted to say forced by my teacher to memorize a poem, right? And one of the poems that Mrs. Bell at the time, when I was in seventh grade, there was a poem titled Two Roads. And basically the poem spoke about having a choice, you know, and some of the people in our community don't realize the choices, particularly the younger people, Walter, they don't realize that there are consequences, choices that they make. If you look at what's going on on social media, they're talking about the violence that's going on in the African-American black community. And there's two different perspectives. One perspective is, you know, the black community is no different from any other community, which means that there's violence in all communities. And the perspective there is highlighting crime that exists just in the black community. It's because we're asking for equal rights. You want to find a way to extend this out there. And the other, which comes directly from the black community, is we can't do anything or ask for anybody to assist us until we are able to help ourselves. Are we able to eradicate the violence in our own community inflicted on our own people? So those two dualities are going on in discussion in on social media right now. I don't know if you heard about the shooting of an 8-year-old child, okay,
yeah,
due to violence. You heard about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to – I'm hoping that you can kind of chime in. Do you see where I'm coming from here? You know, and so – I'm of the thinking that you can have both perspectives, right? In other words, we do need to do some housekeeping in our own community. But at the same time, anytime you subject a people to redlining and where they have to live in a particular neighborhood, you subject people to being disenfranchised systematically over a period of time, and I'm not talking about a couple of years, I'm talking about maybe more than 100 years during segregation and the whole gamut, right? I'm not even going to list. Redlining is just one of them. This is what you get, okay? But somewhere along the line, we should know better, okay? So I'm going to ask you to help save me some words and tell me what you think of what I just said before we wrap the show up. Walter?
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello? All right. Yeah. I mean, you know, how should I put this? I guess, you know, you're right. You're right about everything you said. We need to continue to do some help. We need to keep improving in our community. You know, we can't just always talk about it all the time. We actually have to go start making changes. We can't just keep being idle. We keep saying, oh, we want something to change, but we don't actually do nothing about it, because that's what a lot of people is actually settling for, just talking about it, but not actually, like, doing something. So that's what I encourage everybody to go out and do.
Okay.
Hello.
I'm gonna, oh, yeah, you're there. What's up, Val?
Hi, how are you?
We're doing really well. I don't know
and
how much of the
you
show...
do. Right, I'm sorry. I got caught up in something and I didn't get on until late. But I do understand that a lot of our circumstances aren't our fault. I guess that's what you were trying to, you know, make it to explain, is that not everything that goes wrong in our communities is because we've done something wrong. Some things have also been designed that way to go wrong.
Right, exactly. I had a class called Public Institution versus Black Self-Determination. And that class was all about systematic racism and how it works against Black people in their own community, and how some people who might even be Black don't even understand it.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, in any event, I want to take this. Walter, do you realize that we've gone over 15 minutes?
you've gone about a half an hour. if you hadn't gone over later, I would have missed the entire show.
Okay, that's great, right? One of the things that I didn't tell Walter is that I scheduled this show for 30 minutes.
Oh, okay, right? Okay. Good,
right.
Good.
And just in case, but I'm ready to take the show to a wrap. Val, thank you for chiming in. And do you have any other words before we begin to sign off?
No, I just won't be. I just don't think I'll be able to be on Saturday. But I like this conversation, and I hope that, you know, this is a conversation that can continue, because it's definitely interesting, and if, you know, we can get more involvement and more perspective, that would be nice also.
Right. And I'm going to coattail on that by saying thank you to the listeners for tuning in. And while we might not have all the answers, we're able to put some of the questions and a lot of information up on a platform for you, the listenership, to take part in and find a way to activate yourselves to make a change. Remember, it only takes one person to make a change. It was one person that got on the bus and decided not to give up their seat. And that made a change and made a difference. And on that note, thank you again for tuning in. Walter, any last words over there?
No, I didn't expect the show to go this long, but, you know, it did. I just wanted to make sure everybody tunes in on Saturday if you're able to, and tune in for more.
Okay. That sounds good to me, and that's enough. And that does it for this particular episode of Quest Youth Radio.
Quest Youth Radio
is
the
best radio.
Youth Radio.
Right. So thank you again. And until next week, Saturday, right? We'll see you. Thank you, Walter. Great job. Thank you, Val, for chiming in and being a part of our programming. And until Saturday, 10 a.m., we'll see you. Peace.
Bye-bye.